If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here in Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I'm joined as always by the man I looked up to as a teenager. He taught me my wrestling ways. He made me the intelligent wrestling fan that I became, and now we're pals who podcast. It's Finn Martin. Hey Finn, how are you?
I'm very well, Kenny, and you're welcome. That's all. You know, and thank you for giving me the life that I now have, and everyone else out there.
Oh, God. I knew you had to ruin it. How have you been? How's your week been? I feel like...
Yeah, it's been all right. Yeah, I got out into the lakes, went up... it's not really the lakes, Gateway to Lakes, a place called Arnside. Went up Arnside Knot, which was really nice on Sunday. Drove through the village, and the place was... I don't think I've ever seen it busier. And, like... not going into Arnside. There's just so many people there, and the pubs outside were packed, and it just seemed like the whole thing's over, you know. But we just packed up away from the village and went up the hill, and that was really nice, and got out and got a little bit of air and got a bit of exercise and saw some nice views, some beautiful weather on Sunday. So did that, and yeah, just generally been keeping myself busy, keeping up with the wrestling. That keeps us busy, doesn't it, Kenny?
Do you remember we had a conversation maybe on like the second week of the COVID lockdown? Didn't we have a conversation off air where we were like, we might need to do a lot more historical stuff if there's nothing to talk about? And yeah. It has never been busier. I feel like it's just not slowed down at all. So every week there's just stuff. So it's kind of keeping us busy. Which is great. Do you know what I did at the weekend, Finn?
What did you do? Well, I know you went out for the first time. Was it on Friday night?
Sunday night. Yeah, so basically, because today, we're recording this on July 15th, today is the day that, and I think you guys in England are ahead of us in this, but today is the day where indoor restaurants and pubs are able to open, socially distant and all that kind of stuff, but as of last week, beer gardens and open areas were opened up in Scotland, and I went on Sunday to a place called Brell in the west end of Glasgow, and I've got to say, it was tremendously ran. It was operated with precision. It was like we went in, and it was like I booked an outside table, but the gods had shined down, so it was like an outside table that was like under a gazebo, so then if it rained you didn't care, and it didn't rain, so it was fine. And you know, I had some mac and cheese, had some fries. It got and what they did was they delivered basically you sat down and you had to pre-order like a main, a side, and a drink.
Yeah.
And then the waiter or the waitress comes up to you, they take your order, and then you have to go up and collect your drinks when they call your table number. You go and get your own drinks, and then they bring the food in like takeaway cartons and baskets and stuff, and they put it in a big basket beside your table to limit contact. But I've got to say, they did a really good job. They even said to us at the end, you're the last table in this slot of the night, so if you want to stay on, you can. Just the idea, Finn, of service. Being able to pay to have food brought to you, you eat the food, and then you don't need to do a dish. It has been too long since that was available. But I've got to say, everybody was sticking to kind of, you know, just being sensible and kind of sticking apart. So I was quite impressed by it.
And how was the mac and cheese?
Well, you can't win them all, Finn. So Brell has been one of my favourite mac and cheeses for a long time. And it was a different mac and cheese that they had this time. It was quite creamy, but it wasn't really as cheesy as it used to be. You know, because a good mac and cheese, you're talking a minimum of three cheeses in it.
It's hard to find.
It is hard to find, yeah. Well, you've got to get at least three cheeses in there. You've got to make it tasty. But it was nice enough, and it was creamy. And, you know, they could have probably fed me tinned macaroni on Sunday. I'd have been so happy to get out of the house that I'd have been fine. So, yeah, I've got a little beer garden booked tonight for 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
Outside with Hulk and have a little drink. So, But yeah, I get what you mean, though, is I think a lot of people are kind of thinking, it's over. And I mean, it's not that it's over, but I mean, I feel like if you're sensible and you're doing the right thing, there's nothing wrong with going out and enjoying yourself sensibly.
Oh, no, I agree. Absolutely, I agree. I'm going out this Friday for the first time to a pub.
Okay.
So I think we're going to book a couple of outside tables in two pubs in my hometown of Kendal Cumbria.
Great.
So I'm looking forward to that and catching up with an old pal of mine tonight who actually owns a pub. His pub isn't open yet, but he tells me that he's set up a bar in his house. So
quite right.
So yeah, I mean, I'm all for it, and people just playing it safe. When I just say Sunday, when I went to this place called Arnside, it was packed. It's only a really small place. And we just thought, you know what, let's not walk along, you know, little prom area. Because social distancing would have been impossible. But I mean, generally, I'm all for it, and people playing by the rules. I mean, I always wear a face covering inside whenever I go into a supermarket or a shop or anything like that. So this rule that they're going to be bringing in England to match Scotland's rule, I'm all for it. I mean, I do that anyway. So, I mean, if it helps, then I'm on board with it. I'll do whatever needs to be done to diminish these numbers and to try and get us back to normal.
Well, speaking kind of diminishing numbers, like that segue, the Raw ratings for this week were the lowest in history of Monday Night Raw. Finn, give us the numbers and give us a little bit of perspective about how bad or how serious people should take this number.
Yeah, well, hour one, 8 to 9, was 1.58 million viewers. Hour two, 9 to 10, was 1.599 million viewers. And hour three, 10 to 11, was 1.504 million viewers. Actually, I've got to say that pretty good consistency there in the numbers.
Yeah, when you've got as low as that, they can... Well, you know, because I was thinking about it. I mean, you know, because I'm sure like I have, you've probably seen a lot of comments and people kind of theorizing why they think this is, or how important or not important, you know, the reason for the rating is. And yeah, the thing that I kind of think about, just based on the fact that, you know, I'm watching Retro Raw every week, and, you know, I'll give you an example. So Sondra and I were watching Retro Raw from July the 10th, 2000. And it was when The Rock and Chris Benoit, their program was kind of intensifying. Yeah. And I'm finding on a second watch that Chris Benoit is 10 times duller than I remember him being. So it's even worse than it was at the time. But in saying that, in the opening segment to that show, they have Chris Benoit come out with Shane McMahon. They set up the show saying, you know, right, you know, Mick Foley's away on a tour of Asia, so he's not able to make a match. And, you know, Shane, as a McMahon, says, I'm going to make a match tonight, Chris Benoit versus The Rock. And if Benoit wins, he gets a title shot Fully Loaded. That's the setup at the show. The Rock comes out, he does a promo, he basically agrees to the match. And then after that, from out of nowhere, Eddie Guerrero and China come in, because the week before, Benoit had crippled crossface China. And Ben and Eddie Guerrero and China cleared house with steel chairs, and Benoit and Shane ran away. And in that opening segment, you had a lot of urgency. You had a main event set up that had consequence to the pay-per-view, and you had multiple stories kind of intertwining.
Yeah.
And that was all in the opening part of the show. And I think the issue now is that there isn't really an urgency. You know, we know what the pay-per-view is. We know what the card's going to be. So the TV doesn't really feel like it's something you need to see. And I think that is part of the issue of why people just maybe don't give it a chance live, or maybe just wait and see the YouTube clips and don't think they need to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, it's a 3-hour show. It doesn't feel like there's any great sense of urgency when you're watching the program. I mean, what really is resolved in the body of each episode of Raw? I mean, when it ends each week, there's seldom a cliffhanger. There's seldom a reason for you to get excited about the next week's episode of Raw. I mean, Vince Russo, for, you know, all we can say bad about him, he was somebody who did weave that into almost every episode of the programming that he wrote when he was working for Vince McMahon. He understood the power of leaving people wanting more. Well, not wanting more, because he gave people loads and in the body of each show. But at the end of each program, something happened that made you want to tune in for the next episode of the program. And we don't really get that with Raw. I mean, when each episode ends, you're sort of almost relieved that it's over. And that is not the emotion you as a viewer should have. It just isn't. And it's like, I remember seeing an interview with Stephanie McMahon a while ago, and she used the phrase conflict resolution to describe WWE. And it was just like, well, okay, we sort of do have that at times at pay-per-views, but during each episode of the program, it's like, how often do we really feel like we get that, where we've got a conflict that we care about, and then it's resolved? And it just kind of feels like they're going through the motions in so much of what they do. And this, I think, has kind of bled over into the wrestlers as well. Not all of them, but I think a lot of them just don't feel like they're really putting the heart into it anymore. But I think it's the whole structure right now of Raw and SmackDown as well, is that when you watch it and if something exciting happens, it's almost a bonus. It's not expected. And if it's not expected, then those casual viewers are not going to tune in. It's just going to be hardcore, as we can see what the hardcore Raw audience is now, 1.5 million viewers. I mean, I remember years back when it was down to 3 million viewers and people were talking about how miserable those numbers were. And now we're down to 1.5 million viewers. I mean, the numbers have dropped quite a lot since WrestleMania. A lot of people are blaming this on lockdown. It's like, well, hold on a minute. If we got locked down, it's like chances are we're not going out as much. We're not going to the cinema. We might not be going to the pub. And there's all these things that we're not doing. So we're at home. And I know there's a lot of competition for our, you know, eyeballs these days because there's so much going on. But if you look at the decline of those numbers from WrestleMania, we're only talking 3 months. It's quite staggering, really, how many people have stopped watching just in the space of 3 months.
And also when you add in the idea that there's Netflix and Disney Plus and all this kind of stuff, which are experiencing record highs.
Well, absolutely. But they were there in April as well.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you know, these are, I mean, this, I think Disney Plus has been around for, well, obviously Netflix was around. When was Disney Plus launched?
It launched in March in the UK. And it launched, I think it launched late last year in the US. I could be wrong, but I think that's what it was.
Okay, so that was around at the time of WrestleMania, and obviously this huge marketing campaign for that, and people would have been more inclined, I would have thought, to consume the programming there because it's new and it's available. And it's like, oh, wow, I can't wait to watch this again or watch this for the first time. We're now 4 months into Disney Plus, at least in the UK. So, I mean, you would have thought that, you know, normal viewing habits would have resumed. And instead we have a continuing drop-off in viewing figures for Raw each week. As you say, these were record low numbers. Just, you know, we didn't even crack 1.6 million viewers for a single hour of that episode.
One of the things that I kind of feel about it is that if you look at someone like Drew, for example, I think Drew's doing a pretty good job as champ, but he's not had one challenger yet who feels exciting. Even when he faced Seth Rollins, it was fine, but Seth Rollins has been a bit blah as a heel. We've talked about that. The Lashley one was okay, but it didn't really get to fever pitch. And now Ziggler, how many times have we seen him in a program? So it's like, you know, if you look, and I know I use this comparison a lot, and I'm not trying to compare Drew to Austin, but when Austin won in 98 at WrestleMania 14, his opponents right after it were Foley, Kane, Undertaker, big name, big name, big name. So he was able to keep his momentum going by having these big box office matches pretty much from, what, Unforgiven through to Survivor Series or Judgment Day or whatever. He was in these big main events. And, yeah. You know, who's, and even, you know, even if they go with Drew and Randy Orton for SummerSlam, Orton feels a little bit staler than he did, you know, in February, early March when he was really exciting when he was kind of in the build-up to the WrestleMania match with Edge.
Yeah, I mean, and now he's in this sort of program with the Big Show. I mean, no one for a moment thinks the show's going to win this. This is just a stopgap program for him. I mean, he could be working with someone new. He could be working with someone younger instead of working with this guy who's just been brought back to feed to Randy Orton to give Randy Orton something to do for a few weeks. And this Dolph Ziggler, Drew McIntyre program, it's just like, where did that come from? I mean, did that come from the foul mark desperation? It almost seems like it to me. I mean, I've just gone back here to Monday, to June 29th this year. So we're only talking 2 weeks ago. You know, hour one of Raw that week did 1.862 million viewers. So they lost 300,000 viewers in a couple of weeks. I mean, it's just it's just incredible, isn't it, really? Just how few people are now watching Raw.
And you've even, you know, there was a report that came out from WrestleVotes a couple of days ago that two of the big matches for SummerSlam have been scrapped, one involving Edge and one involving Brock Lesnar, because they're not going to pay Lesnar to do a match in front of nobody, and Edge is injured. So you've got to wonder, is SummerSlam going to be able to feel big enough? You know, because usually they get a bump again around SummerSlam time because, you know, it's typically a big show, but I don't know if it's going to feel like a big show. Hopefully the big show is not on it, but we'll get to that, filming
season two of the Big Show show by then.
I've never wanted a show to succeed more on the basis that he's not on the show anymore. But
You know, you've got to wonder what effect all this is having on WWE Network's, you know, subscriber base. I mean, we're going to find out July 30th. That's when they're going to reveal their second quarter earnings.
And the other thing is that I don't know the exact, I'm going to try and find it actually in my emails while we're talking, but obviously they launched the free network option on, where is it here? Hold on, I think I can find it. Okay, free version of the network, which launched on June 1st. So on June 1st, let's see what's on the free version. So you get Raw Talk, Monday Night War, Ride Along, Table for Three, Photo Shoot, recent episodes of Raw, SmackDown, NXT. So say it's a few weeks behind.
Which if you're a fan, you've already seen.
Yep. Or if you're a fan, you might go, I'll just catch it in a couple of weeks on the free version. I might not be that bothered about seeing it, you know, live. Select historical pay-per-views and NXT takeover events, weekly WWE highlights, top 10, The Bump, WWE Now, Best of WWE, WWE Timeline. So there might be a lot of people who kind of go, I can get enough from this for free without me having to pay the $9.99. So I wonder how that's going to affect their numbers when that was, you know, and we're now just over a month ago that was brought in. But yeah, how's that going to affect it? Are people still going to want to pay $10 or £10 if there's a free version available that can give them stuff that they like?
Yeah, I mean, we will see. I mean, I know their big release was The Undertaker Last Ride, and they pushed that, and that did live up to the hype. But I mean, as you said, I think it was last week, one of the most recent 365s was on Ricochet, a guy who's until recently been on Main Event.
So I actually watched that 365 because I wanted to watch it before we talked.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, so it's not a bad episode, you know, it's covering his first year and, you know, him getting called up and having a match at WrestleMania and then the, you know, the Saudi match with Brock. But the thing is, like, he's got to sit there during this episode and talk about, you know, did the Brock match go the way I wanted to? No. Did I get to show what I can do? No. But I already won by being in the match. And that to me is just not what, as a fan, you want to hear.
No.
Because if what you're saying, whether, you know, I know he probably has to say it, but if you're just going, I'm just really happy to be here, well, fuck off. Everybody's happy to be there. Like, we want people who are going to, you know, shake it up a little bit and do something a little bit different. And there was a point at the end of, he came back through the curtain from WrestleMania after that four-way tag match, the SmackDown tag match.
Yeah.
And Shawn Michaels comes up to him and Shawn's like, oh, that was great. You know, how was it? First WrestleMania and all this kind of stuff. And he was acting as if he'd won the title. And you're going, I mean, yeah, it's cool you're in your first WrestleMania, but this guy's having to pretend like this four-way tag match that didn't mean anything is some sort of big moment. And it's like, somebody said something to me recently, I can't remember who it was, but they said, you know, when are they going to start telling stories instead of giving us moments? Moments should come from the stories. Because if you don't have the stories to back up the moments, then the moments don't really mean anything. They feel quite vapid.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's the stories and it's the emotion that hooks people and keeps them coming back for more. It's sort of like, it's going back to the Vince Russo thing. This is the thing that he would argue. But of course, he took it to the extreme where he wasn't really that interested in the matches. I mean, right now we've got this unbelievably talented roster who can do basically anything, and yet we don't have the emotional heart that WWE needs to draw people in and get people over, make characters, come up with storylines that are gonna, you know, linger in the mind's eye and really attract us and make new fans. And this is what they need to do right now. They need to find a way of making new fans because they can't even retain their current fan base. I mean, that is such a bad sign. You can't retain your current fan base when we're in lockdown, and you're obviously not attracting new fans at the same time. So it's like a double disaster for them. Yeah, they've got all the talent in the world who can do these incredibly athletic matches. They're so crisp and precise and technically sound and so professional and so well-trained. The whole WWE system, when you look at it, is just brilliant in terms of turning out talent. It is just, it's just a wonder. But they don't have the creative, the booking team, the, you know, emotion, people who are supposed to be creating the emotion through the writing by coming up with the stories and the feuds and the characters to make these people into stars. So that talent doesn't really connect with the audience that's already fans and obviously isn't connecting with people who might become fans. I'm sure there's a lot of people each week you just tune into Raw, watch it for a few minutes and think, oh, it's wrestling, and turn it off and put something else on. And it's, yeah, it's, it just really shows the power of storytelling. And WWE is the company that's, you know, looks down its nose at other companies and says, oh, there's no psychology in that. These people don't know how to tell stories. Well, WWE right now doesn't know how to tell stories either, because if it did, more people would be watching the show.
Is there a number that you think that it would have to get to for them to... You could remember they did the thing in late 2017 where the McMahons all came out on TV and said, you know, things are going to change. And I was actually listening to FTR on the Jim Cornette Experience. It's a very good interview if people get the chance to listen to it. But they were talking about that time frame when the McMahons came out and did the big promo, but we're going to change things, it's going to be different and all that kind of stuff. Is there a number that they would have to get to for them to go, right, we need to revamp what we're doing and we need to make some real changes in how we present our TV?
Well, I think wasn't that I think that was 2018. It was end of 2018, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, sorry, it was end of 2018. Sorry.
I think it was, yeah. I mean, you would think that they've already reached that number. I mean, this is rock bottom. I mean, even in the dark days of 1995 when King Mabel, you know, was
there, the he is, top, popping up again.
Top heel in the company. They weren't doing these numbers. And the talent roster was, you know, really thin in terms of guys who could really work. They had very few stars. And, you know, well, actually, that's not true in terms of really where they could work, but we're not like spectacular performers. You go back and look at that mid-1995 talent roster, and the fact that Mabel was chosen to be king really says it all. I mean, they didn't think that anyone else was better qualified for the gig.
I was going to ask about, I mean, in terms of USA Network, you know, they've had WWF off and on since, what, 83, 82, whatever it was. Have they in the past sort of ever had to get involved and say, these ratings are not good enough, you need to change them? Has that happened a lot? And yeah, are there any sort of examples of that happening where WWE or WWF have actually made a change?
I think that has happened on several occasions, yeah, where they've got involved and they've spoken to Vince personally and said that these numbers are not acceptable and something needs to happen. And generally what would happen in those situations is that we would have McMahon overload on the very next episode of the show, because as we know, Vince for many years was a proven ratings winner, and when things were difficult he would return and the story would be built around him. And because for many years he was a tremendous performer and he knew what to do, and when he was willing, he knew how to put people over and get people over and work with talent and make talent seem like bigger stars than they were before he turned up. He was, what's the word? The panacea, I believe that's the word, Kenny.
What a word. Word of the day.
I don't think I've used that word before on this podcast, but can you just look that word up to just make sure that is the correct word?
I will look it up right now. Okay, panacea, a solution or remedy for all difficulties or diseases.
Perfect. I cannot believe that I used that word in
the Neither can I.
So Vince was the panacea in the old days. And, you know, he would ride in on his white charger and save the day. So I'm not sure who they have now. I mean, really, to me, they need to get Lesnar back. They just need to get him back. They need to announce next week on Raw that Lesnar will appear the week after to issue his new challenge, presumably to Drew McIntyre, to then lead to a McIntyre versus Lesnar match at SummerSlam. They need to do something drastic, and they need to do it next week, in my opinion. I mean, it really tells you how much interest there is in Extreme Rules that the numbers were this low on the goal.
You mean the horror show at the Extreme Rules?
Horror show, yeah. As I stated, as I wrote on Facebook, that the real horror show was this rating. So I mean, it's just like, but I mean, they just seem to me like they're not that interested in trying to produce quality programming, trying to get anyone new over. I mean, I know Bianca Belair and Shayna were on Raw this week, and that was a welcome development. We'll get to that. So that did feel like something different. But there just does not seem to be this huge drive to try and make new stars or really to do anything that's, you know, that ambitious or interesting, never mind groundbreaking. Mm-hmm. And to me, at the moment, we're in this lockdown, they should be experimenting with all sorts of ideas. I mean, what to lose?
The thing is, I mean, because there are things that they have done pretty well. You know, Asuka has been featured very heavily in a good way. The Bayley and Sasha thing's really good. The one thing I hope they don't do is I hope that they don't take the belt off Drew and put it back on Lesnar. Because I think if you do that, I think the problem is that you then go back to the old guard. You know, we need to eventually get new people over or get new people, you know. Because the thing is, we know if a belt goes on Lesnar, and look, I like Lesnar, you know, see his Rumble performance, like he's tremendous, but you don't want to get back into the situation where the guy with the belt's there once every 3 months and then everybody's kind of having to keep up with that. It's just not, it's not a system that they've worked very well. It's a system I've always thought they could have done better and done more of a good job with, but they've not. So I think that's something I hope they don't do. But I guess we'll see.
I mean, I agree. I mean, we've got Drew's going to be facing Dolph Ziggler at Extreme Rules this weekend. I mean, surely no one possibly believes that Ziggler can win. They haven't even announced the stipulation for the match yet. And like, why? It's like, oh, I'm keeping it secret until just before the match. It's like, well, why would you do that? You know, you go back and look through his wrestling history. If there's going to be a cage match or a strap match or a chain match or anything like that back in the day when, you know, gimmicks really did make a difference, and they can still make a difference now. I mean, certainly years ago, they would be used sparingly and would really make a difference. You would get the advertising about that match type as soon as possible to try and build interest in that match. So we still don't even know what the match is. I mean, no one cares about the match anyway. I mean,
I should mention it's been potentially, I think it's been spoiled on some advertisement for Extreme Rules where they've sent out some stuff to, you know, subscribers or whatever, and I think it's going to be a TLC match.
Okay. Well,
but I mean, you know, who cares? I mean, they're not announcing it, so what's the, unless you're one of these random people that got the mailing list, your point still stands.
Well, it does, and this is something that should have been rammed down our throat. It should have also been a stipulation that heavily favoured Ziggler, which presumably that does, because he's lighter and he's been in more of these type of matches, to try and stack the odds against the guy that we all know is going to win. I mean, it's just bloody basic stuff, isn't it? We'll get to this when we talk about Raw. Seth Rollins and Rey Mysterio, this eye for an eye business. I mean, it's just, how can you take it seriously? And they actually said, didn't they, on Raw, that Tom Phillips had to say that it was, you can only win by extracting one of your opponent's eyeballs. I mean, who believes that this is going to happen? You know, it's just not going to. It's totally unrealistic. It's just, I hate using the F word to describe wrestling. It's just fake wrestling. And I hate using the F word to describe wrestling because I find it offensive. But it's just fake wrestling, that. And that's not what wrestling fans want to see. They want to be able to suspend their disbelief. How the hell can you suspend your disbelief when you're told that the only way to win the match is by yanking out your opponent's eyeball? So, I mean, there are some matches on there that we're interested in. Like, we've talked about it before, some of the women's matches. But, I mean, at this point in time, it obviously needs more because look at the damn numbers. So, there's so much. There's a lot they need to do. And the most frustrating thing about it is they have this incredible talent roster. They could be mixing and matching between Raw and SmackDown and even NXT. Why not? They've done it previously. Works. Remember when they came up with that invitational gimmick, Kenny, where someone from SmackDown could go over to Raw and vice versa a few times a year?
Like, you mean Wildcard 2.0, essentially. Yeah, I mean,
how long did that last?
I mean, yeah. That. They've not done that in a while.
And it's like, that was one of your gimmicks to try and drum up interest, and you know, just you lost interest in that before the audience did.
I think the problem is when you drum up stuff you're doing the show and then it gets tossed aside, it makes you as a viewer not really pay attention to what's going on, because you know that if you invest your time, you know, fairly often, it will just get dropped.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like the whole thing with the start stop or stop start pushes. They used to do. They don't do it as much anymore, but they were notorious for that.
And you know, I was watching Raw with Steve Gunn. He made a good point. He said, Ricochet, and we'll just talk about this bit just now, but Ricochet just had a new 365 and then he's just getting jobbed out on Raw straight away.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, and maybe I'm nitpicking here, but so Ricochet, we're supposed to believe he's this, like, you know, one and only athlete, right?
Yeah.
But he does a flip backwards right into a guy whose finishing move is a full Nelson. I mean, what an idiot. He looked like... So he not only does he get jobbed out on TV after he's got this documentary, which you're trying to push in your network, he then just looks like a buffoon in the match. Because he just, you know, when he did it, I just was laughing, going, that's his finish. You've just jumped into his finish.
Yeah.
So anyway, we've got loads of other stuff to talk about, and we've got some stuff that listeners wanted us to talk about. So I'll start with Joshua James, who sent us this question on Twitter. Because I know that you've watched the double title match from New Japan, the IWGP and Intercontinental double title match with Naito and Evil, where Evil won both titles. He also turned heel and joined the Bullet Club and betrayed Naito. But here's what Joshua has to say. If you and Finn can cover the IWGP title change in the Power Slam podcast this week, that'd be great. This was the first time in a while that New Japan got this much attention, which almost seems to be unanimously negative. Rare for New Japan to be discussed so negatively. Really interested what you and especially Finn think. My interest is probably more comparable to yours, Kenny. I watch the big matches, 3 to 4 main events and some G1, and that's about it. But this is the first time since I follow them, they were unpopular with the internet fans. What do you make of all this, Finn? You watched the match?
Yeah, I watched the match. I mean, it was 38 minutes, so it was far too long. I mean, they allowed fans into the venue. I think they announced a crowd about over 3,000. I think it was 3,500 or something like that was the announced crowd. Strangely, the arena was in darkness, so you could only see like the first two or three rows. I thought that was a bit odd. So you finally got fans back in the venue and people can't see them. So, I mean, they were making some noise. At times. It reminded me a bit of the Jay White win. I mean, Jay White was a guy that they had high hopes for and to me just didn't make it as champion and they took the belt off him. Evil to me is, I think he won the New Japan Cup, so that prepared him for this. I think that's correct. So he won the New Japan, do you want to just look that up, Kenny, to make sure?
Come on, as we speak.
I think he defeated Okada in the final of that. So that's what earned him this title match. To me, I mean,
yeah, he did win the New Japan Cup.
That's right. So I mean, some parts of the match were you know, marvelous. Like there's this tremendous spot where Evil smashes Naito knee first to a table at ringside. It just looks spectacular. And Naito's selling's tremendous. We had all these like run-ins from Bullet Club members, just ruin the suspense. And like you got like there was like an unprotected chair shot at one point, which you just don't see in big time wrestling anymore. I think the chair might have been gimmicked because the seat kind of flew off, so maybe it was not quite as dangerous as you know from the old days. But the audience didn't really seem to accept him as champion. I think they were sort of dumbfounded that he went over. I mean, I thought it was a very anticlimactic finish. There was a lot of silliness. I know this is synonymous with Bullet Club matches, and it's a long-running complaint of New Japan fans that, you know, run-ins and you know, add-ons and extras really have no place in New Japan, but this is what the Bullet Club does. So, you know, that's their bag. That's what, you know, if you watch a Bullet Club match, then you have to kind of expect that. I was not sold on it at all. I just felt like it was, he just didn't look like a champion. He stood there with the belts and,
Is there a comparison for, I mean, if there's people who are listening to this who don't watch New Japan, is there a sort of WWE or American wrestling champion being crowned that could be a comparison as to how people would feel about it?
Well, I would rather not come up with an example for that because it's unfair, really. But to me, this guy may grow into the role and he'll may become championship material. He may do what Jay White never did. I mean, I'm not convinced because I just don't think he's at that level. And this is a problem with New Japan, of course, is that the top level is better than the top level anywhere else. So for a wrestler, it's kind of going back to old Japan, you know, 25 years ago where you had Mazzaro and Kobashi and Kawada. And even when they made Taue champion, you know, he was, even though he was good and was really tremendous in tag team matches and did have a lot of good singles matches as well, he was not Kawada, Mazawa or Kobashi. So the standard at the top was so high that it was so difficult for anyone to reach it. I mean, Akiyama kind of did reach it as well. He was a genuine top guy there. And I think it's similar now, 2020, and it's been similar for years in New Japan with Tanahashi and Okada and Naito and these guys. They are so damn good. And for people who are further down the food chain, to be accepted at that level is very difficult. So that's the problem when your top stars are so amazing as in-ring performers. But to me, it was, I mean, maybe this will be the start of a bright new future for Evil. And he, 6 months from now, will be recognized as somebody who was absolutely worthy of this and will grow into the role. You've got to remember back in 2012, when they made Okada champ for the first time, people were pointing the fingers at New Japan and saying, are you mad? What are you doing making this guy champion? He's only just come back. There's no way he's good enough for this. He's going to fall flat on his face. And he became, arguably the best worker of the decade. Certainly one of the best. So it absolutely did work for Canada. So it might work for Evil as well. You've got to give him the chance to become the champion that they want him to become. But I absolutely do understand the criticism of this. And I watched the match and I can't say I would recommend it. It just went on too long. I just don't think it was really that good. And there was a lot of extras that I find annoying. And in the end, the finish to me it was a bit of a letdown, really.
I've not seen the match, but it's probably worth noting that not everybody can do a 38-minute match. And not every match should be a 38-minute match.
I agree.
See Seth Rollins and Triple H at WrestleMania 33. Yes. So, but yeah.
The thing is, just like to add something else on there. In order for new people to get over, a company has to take a chance on them. So, I mean, New Japan has rolled the dice with this guy. It's put him over big style in the New Japan Cup. It's made him double champion now. It's absolutely given him the opportunity, to quote WWE, to become the guy that he might be able to evolve into with the spotlight shining on him and with the machine behind him. So New Japan has gone all out here to make a new star in Evil by giving him this huge win and these two championship belts. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. It's up to him and it's up to his opponents and it's up to the machine to make this a success. And maybe like Okada in 2012, he will grow into this role and become that next guy that they're seeking. So, yeah, I wasn't impressed on the night, but maybe 3 to 6 months from now, we'll look back on this match and say, you know what, New Japan was right. And all the critics, including Finn Martin, were wrong.
And I mean, he's in the Bullet Club as well now, so hopefully being in that cool faction will help. So I guess we'll see. I've not seen it, but it is one of the times I've seen more criticism towards New Japan than usual. So I guess we'll see how it plays out. But we have another question from Mark Taylor, and he wants to know, question for the Power Slam podcast. I'm fascinated by the NXT contracts of Gargano, Cole, and Ciampa. Are they on more money than the rest? Same as the main roster? Does Vince and Triple H value those TV ratings that highly? Has Finn Balor being there helped either NXT or himself? Surely Gargano is affecting those ratings and bringing in more cash for WWE on NXT than he currently would in the main roster. Sorry for the long question, just thought it would make a good podcast discussion. And we agree. So what do you think, in terms of Gargano, Cole, and Ciampa, obviously we don't have their exact figures, but do you think there's a big discrepancy between main roster money and them? And is that a fair way to do it? What do you think?
I mean, I don't know. It's really difficult to answer that question. I mean, I can see Adam Cole going to the main roster. I could see him becoming a star there, but I don't see Gargano or Ciampa. I mean, Ciampa said that he doesn't want to go to the main roster, hasn't he? He said
that he feels better now, but not better enough to go to the main roster because of how arduous the travel would be in his body.
Yeah, well, it's not very arduous at the moment, but prior to all this, it would have been. You know, so, I mean, I think him and Gargano are much better in NXT. In a sense, I'm not quite sure what Ciampa does next, you know, after the way in which he was beaten by Karrion Kross. Was he on last week's NXT, Ciampa? Did he appear last week?
No, he wasn't, I don't think.
So we haven't... I think we saw him on the NXT after he lost, didn't he? And he just walked off.
Yeah, he drove off.
That's right. We haven't seen him since. So you would assume that he's going to come back with a bang at some point. But to me, these guys are NXT wrestlers. They are a far better fit there than on the main roster, where I think they would just end up being relegated to main events or just not used at all. As for Adam Cole, he's obviously just lost the belt to Keith Lee. But I mean, he still feels like a star there. I'm not convinced that Undisputed Era would succeed on the main roster. On Raw or SmackDown. So I think they're a better fit on NXT as well. Looking at the ratings that NXT has been drawing recently, I mean, this is obviously a priority now. They're getting, this is something for the USA Network that doing good numbers, this program doing good numbers is important to USA. It's obviously important to WWE as well. I don't know the exact figures of what they're earning, but they should absolutely be rewarded for the value that they provide for that brand. They are far more valuable to NXT than they would be on Raw or SmackDown. And I think their earnings should reflect that. So
as far as I'm aware, guys and girls in NXT obviously get less money in the main roster, with the idea being that you don't really travel that much. You know, you just work in Florida for the most part. And I think even people who are in NXT, when they go and do a takeover and stuff, they actually get more than what the main roster people, like, they get their hotels paid for them, they get their, unless it's like they can drive back to Orlando. But I would imagine, I would be very surprised if the big players in NXT like Gargano, Cole, and Ciampa haven't been bumped up by now. I just don't think that there's a way that they would be on the same money as a Kona Reeves or anything like that. I think that you'll definitely see they're on more money. The Finn Balor one's interesting though, because obviously there's no way Finn Balor's money was going down. Like, he wasn't going to take a pay cut. So they've just, he's probably got the best deal of everybody, because he's still on main roster money. I don't know what that would be. Say it's $500,000 or a year or something, or $300,000-$400,000 a year. And he now has no road expenses. Because the interview I did with Leo Rush, one of the things that he said that he kind of was got the rep of being, you know, having a bad reputation, was because he said that based on all the stuff he had to pay for when he was on the main roster with Bobby Lashley and the hotels and all that kind of stuff, he couldn't afford it based on the contract that he had through NXT. So, but then Balor's probably the opposite. He's probably just rolling in it. Has the Finn Balor experiment been good for him? Probably not, because I know Stephen Ross, who just kind of responded to Mark's question and said, you know, would be more interested in hearing more about Finn Balor's role in NXT. I think his star's greatly diminished since heading there. He's not the title scene. He looks like he's moved down to a lesser division that has now surpassed him. And that's a good point. But I think that in his mind, probably not. Balor could leave tomorrow and go and be a big star somewhere. So I don't think he's worried, but I think that financially he's laughing right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's coming up 6 years, isn't he, in the WWE system? So mm-hmm. he's been there quite a while now, and it will be interesting to see if he renews. I'm not sure when his contract expires, but I would think it would be fairly soon.
It should be soon, because I think he signed in 2014.
14, yeah.
So if he signed, so I'm just going to actually find out when he signed. He signed, let's get the exact month here.
Is it about September time, I think it was?
May of 2014, and then the signing was confirmed in July.
July, okay.
So, but you know, I mean, to Mark and Steven's point, maybe we've just kind of answered through what you just said, Finn, we've answered the question. Maybe his contract, if he signed a 3-year deal in 2014, signed another 3-year deal in 2017, then his contract could be up soon.
Yeah, well,
so maybe why they're not using him.
Yeah, well, that could be, absolutely. I mean, I thought when he returned to NXT, he was definitely, you know, when he did the heel turn and he unveiled the new character, to me, he seemed like a much bigger star then than he was on the main roster. There's no doubt that he's definitely been moved down a peg or two recently. There's no doubt about that. But I mean, I think he's still somebody who could absolutely be shot back into the main event picture again at any time. And as we saw in that match he had with Damian Priest, I mean, we discussed it at the time, and that was Damian Priest's best match in NXT by a huge margin. And Finn Balor obviously had a large part to play in that success that Priest had that night. So, I mean, he's somebody who's definitely very valuable to the NXT brand. Maybe, you know, I always sort of think that maybe Finn Balor needs to form his own faction. You know, maybe that's something that he needs to do there.
Well, because that's what his most successful kind of run that he's known for, right, as being in the faction with the Bullet Club.
Absolutely, and he could put a faction together to oppose Undisputed Era. I think that would reheat Undisputed Era.
If you were, I mean, obviously, it's easy for us to say, and we're just speculating, but if you were Finn Balor, do you think that he has, for his career, do you think he should, if his contract is up, should he resign? Do you think he's one of the people who, if he left, his prospects are really good elsewhere?
Well, I mean, I'm sure he could go back to New Japan, but I mean, would he want to? And the thing is, with all the uncertainty in the world right now, that could be really tricky. I mean, could he even work there at the moment? I'm not sure if he could. Maybe he could go over there, I'm not sure. So that's going to be difficult. I mean, AEW, I mean, it's like, they would probably pay him a lot of money, but I mean, is he really going to become a bigger star there? Based on the way in which almost every ex-WWE star has gone to AEW and been basically ruined by that company, I wouldn't entrust them with my career right now. So, I mean, Finn Balor's, I think that's a risk for him to go there, to go to AEW. I mean, NXT is somewhere where he's established. I mean, he's obviously going to... He's going to be earning the money that he's earning now, if not more, if he were to re-sign. I think WWE understands his value, and obviously Finn Balor understands his value to the company as well. And I think he would probably receive a pay rise to extend his contract with the company. I mean, if I was him, I think I'd probably stay. I mean, there's always a possibility that he could go back to the main roster at some point and get that push that he never really had, play heel there. I think there's a lot of opportunities for him in WWE to become a star again. It's tricky, really.
It's going to depend what his motivation is, because, I mean, that is, you know, it's a good point that you bring up about, even though Jericho and Cody and people have done really well in AEW, Brody Lee and Matt Hardy are not doing well at all. So it's not a... It's not as much of a sure thing. I think he would do better because I think he probably fits in more with what they do at AEW. But do you want it? I think, is he not 37 now, Finn Balor?
I think possibly older. Yeah, I mean, but he doesn't look it, and he's still in great shape. I don't really think that's a factor.
He's actually going to be 39 at the end of this month. But my point was going to be is that at 39, do you want to effectively start again? Or do you want to just keep going where you know you can earn loads of money? You know, you can maybe have an easier schedule. He's put at that point where he could negotiate that. So I think that there's a lot of factors for him that he would consider if he was going to, before he made any decision.
Yeah, I would say so. With WWE, to me, he did fairly well on the main roster, but not as well as he could have done. And I think he proved in NXT, certainly when he did the heel turn, what he was capable of. And I think that heel character, that hasn't been seen on Raw and SmackDown yet. And I think that could go in there and that could do some big things in the company. So that is still available. That is an option that has not been explored on the main roster. With AEW having huge money behind it, they would be absolutely interested in signing Fogel Devitt. There's no doubt about it. WWE will be aware of this. And I think they see value in him and will want to retain him. So I anticipate re-signing with WWE. I would think he'll probably get a raise as well. And, and so he should, because in the current market conditions, you know, this is one of the great bonuses of the existence of AEW is that people can make more money. And that's obviously really good for the talent. And when, you know, WWE, even though its numbers are down in terms of ratings, we know its network subscribers are going to be down, but it's still making a lot of money and it can absolutely afford to pay Finn Balor more than he's earning right now.
So let's move on to, we're going to talk about SmackDown Raw. Luckily for me, I don't really have much to say about SmackDown. I thought it was an awful show. I thought it was really bad. I don't think there was one redeeming thing on that show.
Hold on. What about Dana Brooke's rendition of the Honky Tonk Man's theme tune?
Well, I mean, you know, Sondra loved it. I enjoyed it because it was bad, but it took me a couple of days to really just enjoy it, because when I was watching the whole show, I just thought, Fox paid for this. This is the program they've paid for. We got the rematch from. We got the showing the match from Money in the Bank with Strowman and Wyatt.
Yeah.
Who cares? Jeff Hardy and The Miz. Who cares? Sasha and Bayley against Lex and Nikki and non-tech. We've seen it before.
Yeah.
The karaoke. And then the main event was the New Day against Nakamura and Cesaro for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. I was watching this on Saturday, fairly hungover, and it was just a garbage main event. So if you can't tell, I really didn't enjoy SmackDown. Did you have any more redeeming thoughts or good feelings about the show?
Well, I didn't mind the New Day versus Cesaro and Nakamura main event, but I think it's because my expectations had been lowered, had been reduced to I don't know, the level of below ground level.
You were ready for the Brooklyn Brawler by the main event.
So something that actually had a little bit of spark and energy to it was quite exciting. And it did seem to me like, you know, they had a big brawl with no finish, and it looked to me like they were setting up for a tables match at Extreme Rules, which hasn't been announced yet, I don't think.
But no.
Seems to me that will be the outcome of the angle at the end of this match. But you're right, a lot of it was just, we have been here before, we have seen this many times before, and it was more interesting the first time, and the second time, and the third time. About the only original thing on it was the karaoke, for Christ's sake.
The fact that the best thing on the show was the karaoke showdown tells you everything you need to know about the episode. I mean, do you remember when Nakamura won the Royal Rumble in 2018? And we were like, yes, someone fresh, someone new, it's exciting, they're pushing someone different, they're not pushing a stereotype down our throat, it's all good. And then, you know, Nakamura, if you look up the definition of phoning it in, that is what he has been doing the last couple of years. It's just, I don't want to even see him on the screen anymore. I just, whenever Nakamura comes out, I'm like, oh God, this is just going to be, it's always going to be average. It's never going to be anything more than that. And it's it's just done.
They've just like stripped him of the will to excel, haven't they? It's just classic WWE routine guy. You know, a guy who goes out, he's got a set routine, and that's all he does. I mean, it still seems to me like Cesaro is interested in trying to do something different. I didn't mind the main event. I thought it was decent. But, I mean, it could have been a hell of a lot better. But, I mean, I've written here, this show did almost nothing to promote Extreme Rules. I mean, almost nothing. We didn't even have a live appearance from Strowman and Bray Wyatt, and you just wonder why. I mean, it's like, I didn't worry. I mean, they screen the matches, you say, for Money in the Bank. It's like anyone who really cares has already seen it. It's just give us something new. I mean, there's so much they could be doing with Strowman and Wyatt because they've got all this history together. I mean, Wyatt must be pitching them all sorts of ideas for things to do to promote this match. And we're not seeing any of them. We're just seeing matches that have already aired, except for obviously not on TV. I mean, the karaoke was just... I mean, I thought it was... Michael Cole said, just before it started, he said, this is going to be something. It's really going to be something. Like, Michael Cole was, like, taking the piss out of it before it even began. And then after Dana Brooke got up and started singing, and she was cut off, and Cole was described Dana described Dana's efforts as an unbelievably awful performance. So it was just designed to mock and humiliate Dana. I just found it a bit strange, really.
At least Naomi kind of saved it towards the end. But the thing for me is, do you remember when SmackDown was announced?
What about Tamina's rendition of...
The game.
The game.
I mean, like, it did make me laugh, but it was garbage. But the thing that I was thinking about as I was watching the show was, I remember being really excited when SmackDown was going to Fox. It was like, oh, this is going to be sports-like. It's going to be different. It's going to be fresh. And it's worse than it was before. It's actually got worse. I would take SmackDown a year ago to now, because it's just, not just because of the pandemic, but, you know, because the only thing on SmackDown that's kind of, that I'm interested in at the moment, apart from, I mean, I'm interested in Bayley and Sasha, but their stuff is mainly on Raw. But the, you know, I'm into the Swamp fight a little bit, but they weren't on the show. And then Matt Riddle and AJ Styles, I'm into that, but we didn't really get anything about that on the show. We got an AJ promo, but, like, you know, we didn't really get anything about that.
And in that, he belittled Drew Gulak and just mentioned that his performance, his effort the previous week was really weak. And I was like, and that's something that I remarked upon last week when we covered it. I was like, there's a guy that really had something before his contract expired. And now you're telling us that he's not a force to be reckoned with anymore after you've just re-signed him at presumably a higher rate of pay. Why? And it's just like Drew Gulak was somebody who was a contributor and now he's a passenger. And why? It's just the whole show just felt diluted. You know, it'd be like taking a... It just felt like a drink that was over-diluted and was just tasteless. And it's just... I mean, the thing that... Sorry, Kenny, I did cut you off in full flow there. Now I'm in full flow. I just wanted to mention one thing about Jeff Hardy. So an amazing John Morrison opened the show, introduced Jeff. Jeff's just exasperated by the whole thing. You know, I mean, Jeff, I think, probably thought that, like, you know, addiction was purgatory, you know, but this is almost a new level of hell for him, isn't it? It's just terrible.
It's bad. I've not watched Jeff's Chronicle yet on the network, but I'll make sure and watch it for when we talk next week. So I'm just curious to see how he talks about it, if anything.
And obviously, I'm not making light of addiction, obviously.
Yeah.
So, you know, absolutely, I'm not. But it's just like, here's a guy that's been through so much, you know, and has worked so hard to overcome this over a period of many, many years. And he has done and should be applauded for this, not mocked. And it's just like, I mean, I can't believe he's just going along with this. Maybe he's just going along with this as a reason to leave the company when his contract expires. Maybe he sort of thinks, well, I don't really want to go, but they're making me do this. So that's going to be my grounds to quit, you know, not re-sign when my contract comes due. Maybe it's that, but I mean...
The thing is, I mean, Jeff Hardy's been a guy for years and years and years who he is top guy material. He 100% is. He was in 2008, 2009, and he left then. And I think he's going to leave again. I think that... I just don't think he feel... I mean, look, I know he's... I'm not saying it's... I don't want to put across that it's easy for WWE to have to deal with a talent who consistently seems to have issues go on. That must be difficult, and I do appreciate that. But if you're Jeff Hardy and you're in the cusp of, you know, are you going to re-sign in 9 months, whatever it is? I mean, surely to God, this is not the way to do it.
No, he just appears to be in pain out there when he's going through this and ended up challenging either Morrison or Miz to a match and ended up facing the Miz. And then Sheamus appeared on the big screen with the Guinness. Jeff was distracted. It kind of looked like Miz was going to beat Jeff. But Jeff Hardy then rolled through and ended up pinning the Miz. So he won. Have they announced Hardy versus... Yes, they have announced Hardy versus Sheamus.
A bar fight.
As a bar fight. That's right. So Jeff accept that was something that was stated on the show that Sheamus had challenged him to a bar fight and Jeff accepted. In fact, was it Miz? Was it Miz who suggested that Hardy should face Sheamus in a bar fight? I think it was Miz who brought it up, wasn't it?
And I have zero recollection of it.
Somebody proposed this to Jeff and he accepted it, and it's like. And, like, presumably Jeff's going to win and this will be over after Extreme Rules. But who is looking forward to this blow-off match? I mean, I'm not. I don't think Jeff is, judging by his demeanour throughout SmackDown. I don't think Sheamus is either. I think Sheamus is embarrassed by this. He doesn't really seem like he's, you know, his heart is in this. And as we said last week, Sheamus and Hardy have been around long enough now. They're both in the 40s. They've got enough, you know, backstage sort of muscle and sway in this company that they should have just gone to the Vince or whomever and said, we don't want to do this anymore. We need to change direction because we're not doing it. And I'm disappointed that they didn't do that. And as I say, my theory is that maybe this is, you know, Jeff getting the evidence together in his head that, yeah, WWE has continued to pay him and, you know, has been there for him in his hour of need at times. But this is reason enough for him to leave. I think Matt Hardy made a comment about it on Twitter, didn't he?
He made a comment because I think Alex McCarthy of TalkSport had mentioned that he thought it was a really bad angle, which it is. And Matt ended up responding to that. I'm going to see if I can find the response actually to the comment.
It was like almost presenting him with, you know, unwanted and unneeded temptation or type thing, or I can't remember, maybe it wasn't that, but it was along those lines.
So somebody off the back of that whole, you know, the whole thing, and Matt had said, make no mistake, from what I've seen Jeff do in-ring, he's looked incredible. As a performer, I praise his recent performances. Ultimately, what he does is his decision, his alone. My take on his current story is merely my opinion, which doesn't make it right or wrong. That's not actually what he said. Where is the thing that he said? This is great radio, isn't it? I can't find it. I'll find it as we talk here. But Matt Hardy was not a fan of no. What's going on. And I mean, I've not found anybody yet who thinks that it's good, really. You know, no. I've not found anybody who thinks that who agrees with it.
It's just not entertaining in any way.
No, it's not. And of course, I can't find the tweet. But basically, Matt Hardy was not a fan of it either.
Overall, you were right. SmackDown was another missable show.
Luckily, Raw was better. I thought Raw had some good stuff on it. And you mentioned earlier, and I think two of the best things on the show were the return of Bianca Belair, who I thought did a really fun promo on the Iconics with Ruby Riott. And then she went on to help... Ruby Wright win a tag match against the Iconics, and then we also later on saw Shayna Baszler come out and interrupt a Tozawa R-Truth potential match, beat up three ninjas, and then cut a promo saying that she's tired of waiting, everyone's had their fun, and now she's the dose of reality for the women of WWE. So I thought these were two big welcome returns I'm sure you're happy about as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Iconics were backstage being unpleasant to Ruby Riott. She didn't have any friends because, you know, Liv Morgan had... She's fallen out with Liv Morgan and her only friend was gone. And then Bianca turned up and she revealed that she's friends with Riott. And that led to Iconics versus Ruby Riott and Bianca Belair. And Belair pinned Billy Kay with the kiss of death. So, I mean, it was absolutely the right result. Focus, the emphasis was on getting Bianca Belair over. I mean, Ruby Riott didn't really do much in this match, and nor should she have done, because this was all about making Belair look like a star, which... You know, she absolutely looks like, and I think can be. Shame that Billie Kay was in the match. I mean, she's like a pretend wrestler. I mean, the selling is is so disjointed. It's like she just doesn't know what she's doing in there. So about
she's such a good character that, like, I feel that we forgive her so much more than we forgive so many other people, because as a character, you know, the Iconics kind of remind me of like a young Kath and Kim, if anybody watched that show from years ago. They're a riot as an act.
Yeah, I mean, they are really a lot of fun. I mean, Peyton Royce is decent in the ring, but Billy Kay isn't and shouldn't really be messing with so far as I'm concerned. But you know, she played a role here, put Belair over, so all the emphasis was on her. So I'm interested to see where she goes. And as you say, Shayna came out, destroyed the ninjas, and then took the mic and really could... did someone throw her the mic and she caught it? I think it was R-Truth who threw her the mic.
Yeah, R-Truth said, "I'll let myself out," threw the mic at her and she caught it like a champ then.
What a catch. And I was looking at that thinking, if that was me, I would have made a right mess of that.
So Fumble Central, it would have been.
Which is the reason why I never could have been an in-ring performer and never had any desire to be either.
Finn, so if Dixie Carter could do it, I fully believe you could do it.
No, I don't think so. And Shayna was tremendous. And yeah, she just laid the law down. This is who I am. This is what's going to, you know, I'm not waiting anymore. Declared war on all the other women. And yeah, it's really good to see these two back. And like, why weren't they there in the first place? But you know what? There's no point dwelling on that. They're back now. I hope this is the start of consistent pushes for both, because these two can really do so much for this women's division, which, as we say each week, is usually the high point or the bright spot of the programming. So
well, the other thing is, like, I thought Bianca Belair, because, you know, the Iconics are kind of like the cringe comedy, and they do that really well. But Bianca Belair, to me, and I, you know, I've said this to Sondra before, and I don't want to speak in any way for, you know, black people or people of color, but like, I feel like if you're in the States especially and you're a black woman or a woman of color, like, Bianca Belair is cool and a relatable person, and I feel like that's not a lot of WWE don't have a lot of that on their roster. You know, obviously they have Naomi, but they don't really do a lot with Naomi on SmackDown. So I just thought Bianca Belair came across as really cool and really current, and I think she can go far. And then, you know, how many weeks, Finn, have you been, you know, pining for a Shayna Baszler promo?
And, well, I just needed Natalya around. I mean, you know, what's happened to Natalya and Lana? No, I mean,
don't say their names. It's like Beetlejuice, they'll come back if you say it three times.
I mean, that's the reason the ratings are down. No Natalya and Lana.
No Natalya. The other thing, I guess, to bear in mind is obviously there's been a lot of rumours that Vince McMahon is not high on Shayna Baszler. And I don't want to say that he's done a complete 180 on her or anything, but I felt like this promo was a promo laying down the law that she's going to be doing something pretty impactful in the women's division. So I came out of this feeling quite positive about Shayna Baszler, which I'm happy about.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, she's obviously a formidable performer. I mean, the Becky Lynch program was just a disaster for her. But I mean, let's not talk about that. And I think you've been saying that Shayna versus Asuka should be like a big program for, you know, SummerSlam or potentially post-SummerSlam. Or maybe even post Extreme Rules. I don't want to see her be rushed into the title picture. I would rather that she had like a month long feud with somebody else first, because I just feel like she needs more. I mean, to me, she's ready for the title picture, but I think in order for the public to really accept her as a contender, I think she needs a bit of time to get there. And I think it would be a disservice to her to rush her into it, even though I think she could pull it off. I think, you know, preparation would be better in the long term for her, and her should be like a journey to the title. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of hers and have been for many years. And I think she can be a real player in this company. And same with Bianca. I think there's some parts of wrestling that she still doesn't quite get. But one thing I do like her about her is obviously she's a tremendous athlete, but she's got amazing confidence in herself. And I think WWE needs to really invest in that and build her up. And confidence is such a huge part of becoming a star in pro wrestling. And I think they just really need to say, you know, we really want to invest in you. We've got this long-term plan for you, which is going to be a title match on this date, or this event rather. You know, if all goes well, we'd like you to be champ, or whatever, however they phrase it to them. But just let her know that she's in the plans, you know, verbally, and then show it with their actions, because that's the important thing. You know, in wrestling, too often people say things and then don't follow through with their actions, and they need to do that with Bianca. I mean, we've already had like stop start with her, and from now on, it needs to be constant with her. And
I think, yeah, 100%.
I think she absolutely can be somebody in this company and become. I think she can be something really special in this company. There's just a few things about wrestling that I don't think she really gets yet, but I think she absolutely can get them.
And also, I would recommend, I think I've said it before, but if you are somebody who's kind of wants to learn more about Shayna or wants to see more, her chronicle on the network is really good. It's really good. It kind of builds to the Mania match she had, and you just get to hear her talk a lot. And she's a very charismatic performer, but in a different way. She's not a loudmouth, but she's got a lot to say, so I would recommend that if people want to see it on the network.
She has, I mean, she's really sharp. I think she's someone who could be a tremendous spokesperson for this company. I think she's somebody who has a lot to offer WWE. And I heard those reports as well that, you know, Vince was apparently not enamored of her and all this other carry on. And it's like, obviously somebody has said, Vince, you know, we've got this, she's a tremendous talent. You know, we need to push this person. She has got so much to offer this company. Someone's obviously convinced McMahon that she can, you know, be a player in WWE. And I just hope he doesn't lose interest again, because he obviously already has at least once, possibly twice, with Shayna Baszler so far.
And we got a go-home promo from McIntyre and Ziggler on the VIP lounge. Again, same as I've said a few weeks now, I think McIntyre's doing well, but I just think this is just more Dolph Ziggler, so it's not. It just feels like we're in the queue, Finn, to get somewhere. Not arrived yet.
That's right. I mean, the whole thrust of this is that Dolph Ziggler was saying that Drew McIntyre had, you know, he made Drew McIntyre, and Drew had shown him no gratitude. Drew's an ingrate, you know, for everything that Dolph has done for Drew. And, you know, this is how he repays him. And then Drew came out and said that he was going to hurt, maim, torture Dolph Ziggler. Then he drilled Dolph, and Dolph did a runner. And that was it. We still don't know what the stipulation is yet. I've already mentioned that. So this did not boost my interest in this match. You know, I'm not exactly salivating at the thought of these two wrestling. And that's a shame. I think it would have required some really ingenious booking to make this match interesting, and they failed miserably, because none of it has been ingenious. It's just been just thrown together without really much sort of thought. Feels kind of phoned in, like watching Shinsuke Nakamura.
Like watching Nakamura. We also had this very long, drawn out part of the show. It didn't really work that well for me. We had Seth Rollins. Do you remember how many times he said an eye for an eye, Finn?
I have no idea. Did you count them up?
7 times. He said it 7 times. To put over this match with Ray at Extreme Rules, the Eye for an Eye match, which then brought out Kevin Owens, which then gave us... We ended up seeing Aleister Black against Murphy, then Kevin Owens against Seth Rollins in the WrestleMania rematch. And I felt it was just very oddly presented, because we ended up seeing Rollins basically 4-on-1, because we had the three, you know, the Mysterios and Aleister Black on the outside. And then Kevin Owens gets the win, but Kevin Owens is the guy who isn't in the match at the pay-per-view. It just felt quite disjointed, and I didn't really know how to feel coming out of it.
Yeah, and another thing that I noticed as well, and this doesn't normally bother me, but it really did while I was watching Seth Rollins versus Kevin Owens for some reason, was there was an excessive number of cuts between cameras. They kept changing. The director kept changing between cameras, like really jerky camera work. I was starting to feel a bit nauseous as I was watching it. And that doesn't happen often when I'm watching WWE wrestling. And I just thought the whole way it was shot was just, it's like, do you have to keep changing camera angle like every 3 seconds? It was really distracting. But yeah, I'm with you at the end there. It was, I mean, this was obviously preceded by Murphy versus Aleister Black. Black had the match won after nailing Murphy with the black mask. Rollins yanked Black out of the ring for the DQ finish. And that immediately then led to Owens versus Rollins. Ray and Dominic were at ringside, along with Black was there as well. And Owens and Rollins had the match. You know, it was a decent match. These two are really good performers. I mean, they're obviously going to have a proficient matchup. But it was just, the finish was just really weird. So Rollins had raked Owens's eye just before the finish. And because Rollins had broken the rules, I guess that was seen as justification for Black, Ray and Dominic to distract Seth. So they were up on the apron, weren't they? All three of them were on the apron, I think, at the same time.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
So, and then Kevin nailed Rollins with a stunner for the pin. And, the psychology of it was all wrong to me. It's just so a heel has been beaten by a babyface after the heel has been distracted by three babyfaces. So it was, very confusing.
I'll give them props on one part of it, which is that, you know, usually we see the person who's got the match coming up at the pay-per-view beating the other guy. So we did get something different. I just don't think the way they executed it, like you say, felt different in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... I mean, it was, but it's...
Different can be good and bad. It's good different when, you know, you try a new spice on your steak and it tastes good. Good different is not when somebody puts yogurt in your potatoes. So
that's right.
There's good and bad different.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It was different. Yeah, it was a different approach to the match at the pay-per-view. But the whole presentation of the production and the people at ringside, I don't really see how this put Owens over. So, Owens to me, and then after Owens had had his eye raked, no one was bothered about Kevin Owens. So, and since the theme of this is an eye for an eye, and Rollins was doing this dastardly tactic and going for Owens's eye, you would have thought that they would have been talking about that more. We might have had an update, and that was just ignored. Instead, we had Rey Mysterio taking the mic and saying to Rollins, "You're walking in with two eyes and will be carried out with one." Which is, it's like, this whole stipulation is just simply not believable. And there's a report out there that they're apparently going to use CGI for the finish. Well, I would have thought it would be a prosthetic eye, not CGI. That's completely different, isn't it?
I've got to confess something to you, Finn.
What's that?
I cannot wait to see what shit they're going to shovel. The horror show that is Extreme Rules. So while I understand people are like, you know, who could possibly care? I care. I want to see what ridiculous eye patch. I also got to give Kevin Owens props for bringing up Jean-Pierre Lafitte on Raw and the eye patch. I thought that was great. But, you know, I am very, very intrigued as to see what they're going to do. But I am intrigued.
But that's looking at it from it. It's so bad that it's good.
Yes, it is. Yeah, fully. But then, you know, I'm looking forward to it more in like a, you know, Tom Green did Freddy Got Fingered movie than I am, you know, watching an epic, you know, film noir movie or anything. So
like a masterclass in pro wrestling that we'll be talking about in decades to come. They might be talking about this in decades to come for how bad it is. And it sounds to me like that's what you're desirous of.
That is the desire, yeah. Give me something atrocious. But you know, I also thought on Raw, I thought the Sasha Banks and Bayley Kabuki Warriors match for the women's tag titles was really good. I thought it felt like a big match. I thought it felt like a big title match. And I thought everybody looked good in the match. Kairi just looks like she hasn't missed a beat coming back. And yeah, I really enjoyed the main event. How did it work for you?
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. Kairi as a babyface, doing babyface moves, selling as a babyface. It's just like, why, you know, this is what she... I mean, I know she was brought in as a babyface, then they turned a heel and it didn't work at all. And there was other reasons why we didn't see her. But it was so uplifting to see Kairi and Asuka there as faces against two really competent heels who know how to make face, who know how to make faces look really good in Bayley and Sasha Banks. And Sane sold really well to set up the hot tag for Asuka, as well as she should have done, because Asuka's obviously the star of the team and she's the champion and she's going to be in a match at Extreme Rules this Sunday. And it was the right finish as well. Kairi hit the insane elbow on Sasha. I think Bayley made the save. And then Sasha turned, I think it was the sliding elbow into the bank statement for the tap out victory. So it was right as well that Kairi should lose, because obviously she's not in a match at Extreme Rules. So she was the designated jobber. She had to lose the match. But I thought it was really well done. I thought it was a quality main event. Shame that the ratings didn't reflect that. But it was, you know, it's a show-long problem with WWE right now. They didn't even have people for the first hour. So people aren't even tuning in to see what WWE has in store for us this week. You know, that's the number one problem right now. People are like, well, let's not even bother watching it, because they haven't created an exciting or inviting enough sort of structure or environment that's going to cause people to automatically tune into the program to see what's going to be on this week's program.
Well, Finn, I want you to read out for me, because you did quote it on Facebook. What was the quote of the night on Raw from the Nature Boy Ric Flair to the Big Show?
Right, okay. So Ric Flair approaches Big Show backstage. He says, "When I think about wrestling the big guys in my life, Brody, Hanson, Andre, the list goes on forever. The guy that I think about the most in terms of athletic ability and skill is you." Rick points to Big Show, who kind of looks a bit embarrassed at this point, I have to say. Rick continues, "You have done it all. You've got unparalleled, unequaled coordination. You are separate and have been and always will be." So yeah, Rick was there putting Big Show over, and the Big Show saw through the ruse.
Ric Flair was earning his money on this show by coming out with this. But I've got to say, you know, because, you know, everybody's making the jokes about Orton versus Big Show at the same. What year is it? Is it 2005? Whatever. My favorite part of this whole thing, because, you know, Ric Flair basically, he also goes up to R-Truth and wants him to not get hurt. So Randy Orton basically beats R-Truth in like 30 seconds with an RKO. And then Orton's going to do a punt kick to R-Truth, and Flair's trying to stop him, and out comes the Big Show. And this is genuinely one of the funniest things I think I've seen the entire year. Do you know where I'm going with this?
I think I do.
So Orton challenges Big Show to an unsanctioned match on next week's Raw and waits for Big Show's answer. And the Big Show starts shaking and just goes, "Okay!" and runs into the ring. And it is the funniest. The way he does it is so bad. And you have to see it to believe it.
This guy's supposed to be an actor.
He was just complimented for his coordination by Ric Flair. And his way of doing it is like a very mild, elderly Hulk up and going, "Okay!"
And then afterwards, they had to, I think because it was unclear, they put Big Show's got to tell Sarah, the gormless interviewer backstage, "Yes, I accept!" So it was like
they had to shoot it again! They had to shoot him going, "Just to clarify, I do accept. Fuck's sake. Oh my god. This man has his own show on Netflix."
I don't know. Maybe it's an experimental approach to acting that, you know, is beyond our comprehension, Ken.
Listen, Big Show's a lot of things, but he's not Daniel Day-Lewis. Do you know what I mean? Stick to what you know, Big Show. And then, I mean, the other thing that annoys...
Maybe it's some of that method stuff, Kenny. I mean, what do we know about that?
More than him, if that's what he comes out with. But the other thing, and this has annoyed me for years, and I don't think I've ever said it in the podcast, the logo that is on the Tron when the Big Show comes out, what it reads is there's a massive middle bit that says Big, and above it, it says Show, and below it, it says Strength.
Yes.
What does that mean? Show Big Strength? Does it mean Big Show Strength? Does it mean Strength Big Show? Does it mean I'm a big man of show and strength? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
No.
You're a guy who wrote a magazine and designed covers for years, and we talk about them every week in the Overrun. Does that not, you know, just break into your OCD head?
Well, he doesn't really know, because, I mean, let's face it, I had my moments in Power Slam, and some of those layouts were garbage as well. So, I mean, I've been there. You know, I've been responsible. I've presided over some cock-ups in my time, Kenny. So I know this can happen.
Would you keep a cock-up? Would you keep a cock-up on a Tron for 10 years?
Well, no. I would usually work it out after a few months, you know, or preferably after a few weeks, or even minutes. But, I mean, there were definitely some things in Power Slam. And I look back and I think, why the hell didn't you change that sooner? But in this case, you know, there's a lot of people involved who presumably got a lot of talent and have got time to change this. And I'm with you, Kenny. I mean, I've got to say, I just block it out. I don't even notice it. I think it did used to annoy me, but I'm over it now. You know, I've just managed to just, you know, I've refused to allow it to control my emotions, Kenny.
How excited are you for the big unsanctioned match next week with The Big Show and Randy Orton? Also, can I just point out one other thing, if we want to go into a continuity thing here. So The Big Show is here and he is defending the honour of Edge and Christian, is that right?
I think he did, yeah, that got brought up.
Do you remember when The Big Show was pumping Edge's wife, Vicky Guerrero, back in 2009? You didn't care then. Just hurts
your head. You know, Edge didn't really care about Vicky Guerrero either, did he?
Well, he cared about the affair. I remember that. Now, Daniel Day-Lewis, that. He cared that The Big Show was pumping Vicky Guerrero, who was supposed to be his wife. Oh, I believe that more.
You know, I blocked that out. It's just come back to me, that storyline between those two. God, that was just...
Do you remember the infamous secret cam, you know, GTV footage where Vicky slaps his ass? Great. Oh,
this is why I watch pro wrestling alone. I just don't ever watch pro wrestling with anyone else. It's just too dangerous. You know, you can't have anyone else. I can't have anyone else in the room when wrestling is on, just in case.
Well, listen, I do think overall Raw was a fun show. And I thought they had enough stuff on it that made it, you know, interesting to watch. And obviously we're going to have Horror Show Extreme Rules this weekend, and we're going to have Slammiversary this weekend as well. So hopefully next week we can watch a few matches from Slammiversary, see if MD turns up. I'm sure we're going to get a couple of gentlemen from a certain club.
Yes.
Who are going to appear on Saturday night. And then we've got the Horror Show Extreme Rules on Sunday. So we'll be covering all of that next week on the podcast.
We will. And to answer your question, I think I am actually looking forward to Show versus Randy Orton on Raw next week, the unsanctioned match. I think it's going to work better on Raw than it would have done at the pay-per-view, because there's enough gimmick matches on there already, or at least there will be when they finally get around to announcing them. So I think that's going to work better on Raw. You know, hopefully it will have, you know, an effect on ratings, you know, in an upward direction. I mean, we'll really know that Big Show's, it's over for Big Show if the numbers go down next week. And, you know, maybe it'll be a decent match. I mean, hopefully they'll have some unusual and creative and, you know, experimental things in store for us in the
unsanctioned. Bells and whistles.
Yeah, bells and whistles. All the smoke and mirrors and all the add-ons and extras and all the silliness. So, yeah, I am quite looking forward to it. But mostly I'm looking forward to it, Kenny, because I know it'll draw a line under the feud.
Let's hope so. Let's hope that's what happens. Well, listen, that is it for us here on the podcast. We'll be back next week, as I say, with the Horror Show from Extreme Rules stuff and Slammiversary and loads more. Finn, do you have any plugs for us before we ride off into the podcast sunset?
None this week, Kenny. None this week. Do you?
Just two plugs. The YouTube channel is kicking at full speed. We've actually saw one of our highest months in you know, in ever. We've had over like 2 million views last month alone, so
wow.
People are really loving the content over there. We've got a new interview up with Montez Ford, one half of the Raw Tag Team Champions of the Street Profits, where he serenades me. Sorry for that buzzer that just went off. It's independent radio, everybody. youtube.com/InsideTheRomes. And also Patreon, where you can get this podcast 24 hours early. Can't take the beep out, unfortunately, but we do podcast and put that up 24 hours early. We also do an overrun over there, and we've got loads of other things going up on there. Retro pay-per-view reviews, pay-per-view reviews, and so much more. So, Finn, I hope you enjoy the rest of your week, whatever you're getting up to.
And you as well, Kenny. And I think that buzzer means that your macaroni cheese is ready.
It's actually someone taking Hulk out for a walk on my behalf because I don't have time today because we're doing the overrun and I've got a conference call later on this afternoon. So, but I wish it was macaroni cheese. If it was macaroni cheese, I would not be on this call anymore. I just hung up.
fantastic.
But yeah, thank you for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.